It's tuned to yesterday, delivering programs from the golden age of radio. Welcome, I'm your host, Mark LeVernier. Later on, we hear the Screen Director's Playhouse with the story Chicago Deadline from 1950. But right now, it's the Counter-Spy series with the case of the bouncing bank robber. Don McLaughlin and Mandel Kramer star in this Phillips H. Lord production from August 23, 1949 on ABC.
Counter-Spy.
Washington calling David Harding, counter-spy. Washington calling David Harding, counter-spy.
Harding, counter-spy, calling Washington.
United States counter-spies, especially appointed to investigate and combat the enemies of our country, both at home and abroad.
Tonight, the case of the bouncing bank robber, another counter-spy report to the American people, brought to you each Tuesday and Thursday by Pepsi-Cola. And now, to counter-spy. Sometimes, counter-spy cases extend over a period of years. Tonight's case, however, extended over a period of hours. The most exciting 6 hours your counter-spies ever experienced. River City, 3:10 in the afternoon. In a building on the north side, David Harding, chief of the counter-spies, was completing a routine field office investigation. In another building on the outskirts of the city, the Merchants Federal Bank and Loan Association was preparing to close. A few customers were at the teller's window. Then, two men entered quietly from the street, stopped, and looked around.
You stay back, Gus, and cover those goons behind a railed-in space. I'll take the cashier.
Okay, Bruce.
Oh, you have now. Fine. Yes, it's open. If it's an overdraft, it makes no difference about it. All right.
Yes, can I help you, sir?
Yeah, sure, cashier. Take this briefcase. This is a stick-up. Start shoving the money into that case fast and quiet. Nobody will get hurt.
Yes. Yes, sure.
Come on, faster.
All right.
Bring the burglar alarm, will you? Okay, hero, take this. All right, everybody, back against the wall. No tricks.
Wait. The door. Metal door sliding shut.
Nobody move. I said, lady, nobody move. Yes, cut that out. Can't knock these doors down.
The cops will be here. We gotta get out. How do we do it, please? I'll bet our car's rammed already.
That plate glass window. We'll jump through. Follow me.
We'll get caught. I can't go through the window.
Okay, stay here, but you won't be talking to no cops.
I was just going to take off.
What now? Fast.
Wait. The cop.
Drive. I'll take care of him. Got him. Take the next corner.
Office, River City. This pair armed and dangerous. Time, 3.05 p.m.
Still inside the bank?
No, sir. He just left for the hospital with the wounded holdup man. The chief wants you to question the bank manager. He's inside.
Right. You remain here with the car for any radio reports.
Mr. Peters, he just went berserk. Two people wounded, two dead.
Yes, I know, Mr. Fulton. But what about the killer's appearance?
Oh, clean cut. Very big. Athletically built. Blonde hair.
No question about the athletic part.
No.
You say he leaped straight through this window without any hesitation.
Yes.
Wonder he didn't cut himself to pieces.
Well, he was wearing a very heavy leather jacket, from what I could see.
Mm-hmm.
He ran to about here. His partner said something. Then he turned and shot him. And then continued on straight through the window.
I see. Did you notice how he went through the window?
Definitely. As he leaped, he covered his head with his arms, actually broke the glass with them.
Mm-hmm.
And he landed outside just like a tumbler in the circus.
How do you mean?
Well, you know the trick they have just before they land. They double up, bring their chins down sharply, and actually land on their shoulders and back.
You're very observant, Mr. Fulton.
Well, it happens I took my daughter to the circus two nights ago. I couldn't help noticing.
Say, Peters.
Excuse me, Mr. Fulton.
Yes, Edwards. A report just came in on the holdup car.
Yes?
It was found abandoned in the Rosemount section, 18th Street and Avenue J at 4:10 p.m. The beat patrolman's guarding it now.
Good. We'll get out there as soon as we can.
Is there any chance, Doctor?
Not much, Mr. Harding. That's why we're using the respirator. It's a wonder this gunman wasn't dead on arrival with these bullet wounds in him.
Well, is there a chance he'll regain consciousness, even for a moment or so?
Well, that's what we're trying to do right now. He's going fast.
Well, try, Doctor, try.
Right. Nurse, another hypodermic.
Adrenaline?
Yes. Alcohol on his chest, nurse. Thank you. There. It'll be a few seconds. Yeah, he's responding. You'd better get over here if you want to talk to him, Mr. Harding. Eyelids moving. Here, I'll remove the respirator. All right, start talking, Mr. Harding.
Can you hear me? Listen. Can you hear me? You know who shot you, don't you?
Rat. Rat.
But his name. You don't want him to get away. His name.
Brice Hondo.
Where does he live?
Hide out.
Yes?
Front Street. 24.
Go on.
24.
It's no use, Mr. Harding. That's it.
Brace Hondo. 24-something on Front Street. Well, thank you, Doctor. I hope it's enough.
No, Brace, I won't do it. You're putting me on a spot.
Don't be crazy, Peg. They got descriptions of me over half the town by now. I heard it on the 6 o'clock news.
Why'd you have to start blasting away?
What'd you want me to do, sit there and wait for the cops?
What about my description? You think they haven't got that?
Who can describe a dame? Besides, you were in the car all the time. Getting dark now. Look, Peg, there's no two ways about it. We got to steal a car and lay them out of here.
But the whole town's hot. We'd be safer holing up in here.
We'll take that chance. All my life, I've been taking that extra chance nobody else takes. It's always paid off. Besides, babe, they got a murder rap on both of us.
Me? Not me.
Don't kid yourself. You've been in from the start. I fry, you fry. And that's an odds-on bet if we stay here.
Okay, Bray.
Smart girl.
Where do I get the car?
The Farley and Megan Circus is playing a stand just across the river right next to the arcade amusement park.
So?
There's a big lot, free parking, no attendance. Take the ferry right next to this block across. Go to the lot. There's always some jerk leaves his key in a car. Watch for it, heist it fast, and then get back here.
Hello, Dave. Hospital receptionist told me you'd be in this waiting room.
Peters, you're just in time.
We got a line on the killer's car. It was abandoned.
We can hold that, Peters. The other crook talked before he died.
Oh?
The one who escaped is Brace Hondo, with a hideout on the 2400 block on Front Street, very close to the river, right next to the arcade ferry house.
2400 block.
Now, except for one garage, the rest of the block on both sides is old brownstone houses and warehouses.
Uh-huh. Set up a raiding squad?
Yes. Now, we won't have enough of our own men, so we'll have the local police lend us a detail. And have them bring along a loudspeaker and spotlights. It'll be dark shortly. I want at least 50 men so we can cover all the exits in that block. All men assigned to their stations, Peter?
Yes, Dave. Moving into position now. They'll start searching every building on the block at exactly 7:45.
Well, 10 minutes from now. You told them to play it careful. Stay out of sight.
Right. And when we close...
Hold it. Huh?
A girl.
Going into that brownstone house. Number 2410.
There was a girl about that age driving the getaway car. One of the bank witnesses said.
Yes, I know. When it's time to start moving in, you and I'll take that building personally.
I got it, Brace. The packet 48, loaded with gas.
Well, it's about time. It's almost 7:45. Let's go.
No, I need a drink first. I got the jitters.
There's a bottle. Belt it. I'll make sure the coast is clear. Hey, you dumb little...
What's the matter?
Come here. Look down there in the shadows, on a corner, a cop. And there, another one.
It wasn't me, Brace. I drove right off the ferry and turned the corner. Nobody tailed me, I swear it.
And down there, across the street in that alleyway, more.
What do we do, Brace?
Let's blast our way out. We got an arsenal in this hideout.
No, Brace, I don't want to.
What did I tell you about always taking that extra chance?
But I'm scared.
All right, so cry a few tears, but take this automatic. You can handle it. I'll handle a Tommy gun.
Brace, don't.
Get up. Here it goes. Okay, coppers, here's something for you. Got an army out there. Go get them some more. Start shooting, babe. Fire at their flashes.
Okay.
Keep it up, babe. The roof. We'll have a better chance in the open.
No, Brace. I couldn't make it.
My heart bleeds for you, babe, but I'm leaving you behind. One more burst, you can hold the fort alone. So long, kid. Give my regards to the cops. I ain't in the mood to deliver them personally.
Outside.
Spotlights number 1, 2, and 3 on the roof. Quick!
One of our men hit. Dave, look. Hondo's going to try to jump to the ferry building.
Keep those spotlights on the roof. Spotlight number 4. Stay with Hondo.
Dave, he made it. On top of the ferry slip. The spotlights, quick!
All spotlights! Shift to the roof of the ferry slip.
Wow, that must have been a 15-foot leap. He's going to try to make the ferry. It's leaving the slip.
Keep that number 4 spotlight on Hondo. Hold your firemen. There are passengers on that boat.
Hondo made it. He's on the ferry boat.
Attention, ferry captain. Reverse your engines and return to slip at once. Attention, ferry captain. Reverse your engines.
Engine room. New orders from the wheelhouse.
These are government
orders. Reverse your engines. We're going back to the slip.
You go back, Popeye, and you're a dead sea dog.
Who are you?
A guy with a gun. Now listen, Popeye. Signal your engine room for full speed ahead and keep going.
Well, I...
Full speed ahead.
The ferry captain's going ahead, Chief.
Hondo must have reached the wheelhouse, Peters. Have the police on the other side of the river meet the ferry.
Right.
And radio the river patrol for 3 fast boats immediately. We're going after him.
Okay, Dave. We're all aboard. And cast off. The ferry hasn't reached the other side yet.
Cast off!
Says the gunman dove off the ferry. Radio the other boats to fan out. Throw their spotlights on the river and on both banks. We'll take the center of the fan. Okay, full speed. Out here on the river, Peter. See anything?
Not so far, Dave. Not even the other patrol boats. In spite of our search.
Patrol boat 3 to Mr. Harding.
Wait.
Patrol boat 3 to Mr. Harding.
Go ahead, patrol boat 3.
We picked up the spot where Hondo may have gone ashore, just above the amusement park and circus.
Head for it, patrol boat 3. We'll join you there. Hondo came ashore, all right, Peter.
Yeah, trail heads to the circus tent.
Edwards.
Yes, Mr. Harding.
Call in the other boats. Now, contact the police at the ferry slip. Have them cover all exits from the circus lot and the amusement park.
Right, sir.
Also have some men in plain clothes circulate through the crowd. Keep a sharp eye out.
Peters and I will contact the circus management and get their cooperation.
This is terrible, Mr. Harding. The evening crowd's beginning to collect.
That's why we haven't a minute to lose, Mr. Purdy. Now, give me a picture of the way you're set up here.
Yeah, well, the circus and the amusement park are completely on Cove's Point.
Yes, I know. We've got every exit covered, but what about your specific layout?
Well, the amusement park is out at the end of the point. The main entrance to the circus arena there leads to the performer's tent.
Yeah, go on.
And that small entrance over there leads across an open space to the menagerie tent.
Dave, Edwards has the men all placed. We've got about 20 more circulating through the crowd.
Good. Well, now, hey, wait a minute.
What is it?
There in the arena. See that bedraggled figure?
Oh, it's just a clown that... No, it's not.
He's sopping wet. That's our man. He's heading for the exit to the menagerie tent. Come on, Peter.
Okay, Mr. Harding. I've got men placed all around the menagerie tent.
Good, Edward. All right, Peters. The PA microphone, please.
Mr. Harding, will there be any shooting?
That's up to Hondo, Mr. Purdy. We'll do our best to avoid it.
I hope you can. Hey, listen to those animals. They're upset and scared.
All right, Dave. Here's the microphone.
Hondo, we know you're in this tent. We've got it surrounded. Now play it smart and give yourself up.
What?
Hold your fire, man. All right, Hondo.
The animals, they'll get excited. And...
Dave, look.
Our lions are loose.
Shooting the locks off the animal cages. Edward, warn all our men. Bertie, get your animal men here, quick.
What about Hondo?
Forget him from now. We've got to pitch in before that circus crowd finds out the animals are loose. They'll start a panic.
Hey, mister, where do you think you're going? Roller coaster's under repair.
Quit stalling, sister. Get out of that ticket booth. You're going for a ride with me.
But the coaster's under repair, I tell you.
Does she run it all?
Yes. Oh, now, mister. A gun.
Come on, girlie. Start moving fast.
I hope they get all the animals, Mr. Harding.
We'll do our best, Pretty. All the rotten tricks. We've still got Hondo's escape covered. He can't get off this point. What's that noise, Mr. Pretty?
That's the roller coaster. That's funny. It's not supposed to start now.
Hondo,
the roller coaster. Well, he's crazy. Where can he go?
We'll find out. Come on.
Tough spot, Dave. Hard to see the upper part of the coaster.
Mr. Purdy, how's this thing built?
It's a pretty long ride all around. First long incline starts right here. It goes up to a height of about 70 feet right at the edge of the water.
Wait a minute. I can make out something now, Dave. A man in a leather jacket. It's Hondo, all right, in the car. Holy smoke, there's a girl with him.
Girl?
Good heavens, the ticket girl from the booth here.
I don't get Hondo's scheme. The roller coaster only goes around and ends up right here again.
Well, he could take a high dive from the top of this first incline into that water. Maybe get away from us after all in the dark. Purdy, how do you stop the coaster?
Yes, right here, this big lever. Stopped.
Dave, Hondo's getting up. Starting to climb forward out of the car.
Fire a warning shot, Peters.
Come down, Hondo. He's firing back.
Holy smoke.
Peters, your gun. Yeah, but fast, Dave. He's almost out of the car.
Look out for the girl.
You got him, Dave.
Come on. We'll climb up that incline. Get him and the girl. What's that?
The car's slipping back. Uh-oh, something's broken. The sawtooth wheels in the middle of the track, they act as a brake.
The car's coming right down here and fast. It'll be a crash. Stand back and pray for that girl. Come on.
Take a look at the girl, Peter. How is she?
She just fainted. No cuts or anything. What luck. How about Hondo?
Here he is in the wreckage.
Your shot did it, Dave.
It was wilder than a wild animal, Peters. Well, this is one case we can close without a trial. I can't say I'm sorry. It took us
6 hours.
When your friends drop in, be generous, but be thrifty, too. Serve plenty of delicious Pepsi-Cola. Tune in every Tuesday and Thursday, same time, same station, to Counter Spy. Listen on Thursday for the exciting Counter Spy case of the murdering messenger.
The fast-talking man who posed as himself to impersonate someone else. The strange corpse that was discovered a quarter mile deep in the earth. And the riverboat which carried a cargo of intrigue that exploded in the Crescent City. Be sure to tune in on Thursday for
Case of the Murdering Messenger on Counter Spy. Tonight's Counter Spy program originated in New York and featured Don McLaughlin and Mandel Kramer with music by Jesse Crawford. Counter Spy is a Phillips H. Lord production for Pepsi-Cola. Enjoy some Pepsi, ice cold, tonight.
Counter Spy on Tuned to Yesterday from August 23rd, 1949 on ABC. You're listening to An Hour of Crime on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levanier. And now we turn to the Screen Director's Playhouse for an adaptation of the 1949 drama and noir picture Chicago Deadline. It originally starred Alan Ladd and Donna Reed, and Ladd reprises his role as Ed Adams in this March 24th, 1950 broadcast on NBC.
RCA Victor, world leader in radio, first in recorded music, first in television, proudly presents
Screen Director's Playhouse, star Alan Ladd, production Chicago Deadline, director Lewis Allen.
The Hollywood Screen Directors present the transcribed journal of a phantom search. Tonight, for the first time on the air, the motion picture drama Chicago Deadline, starring Alan Ladd in his original role of Ed Adams. In the pale half-light of a hospital room, a man and woman stand beside a bed, watching the bright, restless eyes of Ed Adams and hearing his scattered words.
Rosita didn't have to die. Had to tell them. Make them understand. Rosita. Everything in the dress book. Rosita. She didn't.
He's sick, Doctor. So sick.
Fever from the bullet wound.
It is a good hospital, isn't it?
Tell them the story.
You'll take care of him.
Of course. Make them understand.
Miss Purdy, you said Mr. Adams is a reporter.
A reporter. Ed says they build him tough in Chicago.
Who's this Rosita? Is he in love with her?
In a way, I guess. He must have fallen in love with her. I don't know when. Last night, today.
We should find her.
I know where she is, Doctor.
Where?
The city morgue. She died yesterday morning.
Leona!
Yes, Ed. It's Leona.
I wanted to help, Rock. I wanted to help Rosita.
Ed, you can't help her anymore.
Leona.
You have to sleep.
Tired.
Sleep.
Sleep. Rosita. Listen, Rosita. You gave me a deadline until you were buried. I had till then to find out your story. To tell them the truth about you. And now they'll bury you tomorrow. I tried, Rosita. From the beginning, yesterday morning.
Ed.
I run a straight hotel, Ed.
Maggie, I told you there's $10 in it if anything happens to your hotel. And you call me at the Chronicle before you call the cops.
Well, I did, Ed.
All right, here's your $10. Now, what's up?
Right in this room here. It's a girl. She's dead.
Yeah, what killed her?
Just up and died. Sick, Ed. TB.
Oh? I paid $10 to find out a girl died from TB in this flea trap?
What'd you expect, Ed? Lincoln's assassination?
Now, let's have a look at her. Why, she's just a kid.
Yeah, pretty kid, too.
Great way to check out, isn't it? What's her name, Maggie?
Oh, it's French or something. Rosita Jean Dur.
Rosita Jean Dur. Does she have any baggage?
Yeah, those few things on the dresser, Ed.
The worldly possessions of Rosita Jean Dur. Lipstick, nail file, address book. Names, phone numbers. Must be 50.
Yeah, did you find anything interesting?
It's hard to say, Maggie. Maybe I'll go back to the office and make about 50 phone calls and find out. Okay, Peg, I fixed it with the city desk.
Yeah?
You're working with me on the story.
What's the deal, Ed? All this fuss about an address book.
I borrowed it, Peg. From a sweet-faced kid named Rosita Jean Dur. She died this morning.
So?
So a girl nobody knows conks off in a crummy hotel room. No friends, no relatives. Just an address book full of names.
What names?
Read them. Solly Wellman, gangster. Blackie Franshaw, gangster. John Spingler, gangster.
So she knew people.
And that means that people knew her. But every time I ask about Rosita Jean Dur, they get sudden attacks of galloping amnesia.
No kidding.
Listen in. Let's try this name, Gigi Temple.
Temple? He's a big wheel, Ed. President of the Iroquois Trust.
Hello?
Mr. Temple?
Yes.
Ed Adams, Chronicle.
How did you get my private number?
From Rosita Jean Dur, just before she died this morning.
I never heard of her.
Oh? Funny, she had your private number,
isn't it? Mr. Adams, if the Chronicle connects my name with this woman, I'll sue the paper for every cent it has.
See, Pig? Just a girl nobody ever heard of. Let's try the next one.
Hello?
Tommy?
Yes?
This is a friend of Rosita's, Tommy.
Oh?
She died this morning. Hello? Tommy?
Yes.
I'm a newspaper man, Ed Adams. I was wondering, Tommy, could you identify the body for us?
Yes.
Can you make it at 8 o'clock tonight at the morgue?
Yes.
Tommy? Tommy? Well, at least somebody admits knowing her.
Some fun. Let's try again, huh?
Here's Belle Dorset listed at the Lander Arms.
Lander Arms?
Belle Dorset, please.
Hello.
Hello, Belle. This is a friend of Rosita's.
Rosita?
She just died, Belle.
I don't know her. I never heard of her. Let me alone.
Just a girl, Pig. And you bounce the corpse down the street and suddenly you've got the place all to yourself.
What next, Strongheart?
Next? First, I want to call back the operator at the Landor and offer a fin to find out where Belle Dorset goes if she leaves the apartment house.
Gotcha.
And I'm going hunting with Rosita's address book until I find out why and how. I'm getting sore, Pig.
So you're the guy the newspaper phoned about.
That's right. What about Belle Dorset? Did she leave after that phone call?
Bag and baggage, son. No forwarding address.
Next in the book, Mr. John Spingler. You hear about Rosita?
What about her?
She's dead, Spingler. TB.
I don't know her. But I'll stick her to a funeral. If you'll keep it quiet.
All right, Rosita. Let's try the next name in your address book. Let's try Leona Purdy.
Hi.
Leona Purdy?
Yeah. This is where the party is. Come on in.
Thanks.
Well, who's friend of a friend of you?
I'm a friend of Rosita's.
Who are you?
I'm a reporter, Ed Adams.
Want to tell me about it, Ed?
Want to tell me about Rosita?
Why?
She's dead.
Oh.
Talk, Leona?
Not now.
When?
Later. Don't look at me like that. I promise I won't make a pass at you.
My mother will be glad to know. Now, if you'll pardon me, baby, I'm going to go and cool off.
Where?
The city morgue. Is that her, Tommy?
Yes, that's her. That's Rosita.
Who was she?
My sister.
Tell me about her, Tommy.
She ran away when she was only 17. Married a fellow named Paul Jean Dure.
Where is he now?
He was killed in an automobile accident 4 years ago, but she wasn't happy with him. She was terribly hurt by something that happened to their marriage.
And after he died?
Rosita came here to Chicago. She moved around a lot. But every year on my birthday, we had dinner.
Hey, Ed.
Yeah?
Pig's on the phone at the office holding a call for you on the board.
Okay. Hello?
Ed, I got Blackie Brancho on the board. He called in. You remember him?
Yeah, sure. He's in Rosita's book. Big Shot Mobster about a year or so ago. We'll put him on, Pig.
Hello?
Hello, Blackie. This is Adams.
Yeah, I want to tell you about Rosita.
Well, I'll be right over.
Hurry it up, Adams. I want... Rosita, I loved her.
Blackie, who was it? Who shot you?
I just killed Blackie Francho. Adams, be smart. Leave it alone. Forget Rosita. Ed, this is Pig at the office. Who was that guy?
How do I know? We just had a direct line to Blackie Franchot's murder.
Why'd he have to go and get himself killed off now?
Why? Because a girl died this morning. A girl nobody ever heard of. A girl named Rosita. You see, I tried, Rosita. I found a few scraps of your life. Bits and pieces. From the people who wouldn't talk and those who did. I found out that Blackie Franchot loved you. He told me as he died. I left the morgue, Rosita, and started for his apartment. I just stepped out of the cab and then I found another piece of your life.
Adams?
Sally Wellman. I've been wondering when you'd turn up.
Get in the car. We can talk.
Won't that be nice?
Now, why would I turn up, Adams?
You left your calling card in Rosita Jean Dure's address book.
Too bad about Rosita.
Too bad about Blackie Franchot.
What happened to him?
An hilarious attack of murder. Sally, what did Rosita have to do with this?
Nothing.
I'll find out, Sally.
Look, Adams. Nobody likes to hurt reporters. But sometimes a wise guy brings it on himself. That's the end of our talk. Here's where you get out.
Maybe next time we talk, Wellman, I can make it more exciting.
I said get out.
Yeah. Thanks for the ride. Hello, Leona.
Well, the man did come back.
On business.
At this time of night? Get out of my apartment.
Blackie Franchot was shot tonight.
Oh, Ed.
That means something, huh?
Ed, forget Rosita. You'll get into trouble.
I'm already in trouble. Where does Blackie fit in? How does it happen that a guy who loved her gets knocked off after she's dead?
I don't know, Ed. Rosita and I were roommates. Blackie Franchot was in the rackets, but a nice guy. He made a play for Rosita. Well, at first, she didn't want any part of him. But then she began to trust him and like him and love him.
What happened?
Party one night. A lot of big shots were there.
Yeah, who?
A gilt-edged gunman named Sally Wellman.
Hmm. We've met.
And a dollar-happy financier named G.G. Temple.
Of the Iroquois Trust. He's another guy who made Rosita's edition of Who's Who. And Rosita was at the party with Blackie?
They were dancing together. Then John came over and tapped Blackie on the shoulder.
John? John who?
John Spengler. He works for Solly Wellman.
Big-hearted Spengler. He wants to stake Rosita to a funeral.
He told Blackie that Solly Wellman wanted to see him.
Who was Solly with?
Girl, Belle Dorset.
Belle Dorset, sure. There must have been some party.
Why?
Because all those names turned up in Rosita's address book. They must have given her something to remember.
I guess they did. Because as soon as Blackie left her to talk to Solly, another man asked her to dance. It was G.G. Temple.
How big a play did he make?
Very big.
What about Blackie Franshaw?
He was still number one with Rosita. Then she visited him one evening. She found him beaten to a pulp. Rosita took him out of town. He recovered, but his nerve was gone. He ran away.
And Rosita?
We lost each other. But I heard she was doing all right.
With G.G. Temple?
That's right. With G.G. Temple.
Strange, kid. How does it all fit together, Leona? She was tied in with Blackie, and Blackie's dead. She was tied in with Temple, and he's scared green. So is Solly Wellman. So is John Spengler. What's the connection?
Spengler worked for Wellman. That's all I know.
I wonder what Rosita was really like. Leona, I can't get her face out of my mind.
She was all right, Ed. Like a fine locomotive that hits the wrong switch and rides onto the wrong track.
Yeah. Who pulled the switch? Who let her die?
She was sick.
So that makes it all right, huh?
No, Ed.
No. Somebody was responsible. Somebody in that little address book of hers.
Where are you going?
Oh, I don't know. Walk, think, pull names out of a hat. It'll be morning soon. Maybe by then, maybe we'll be able to do something for Rosita. Good night, baby.
Ticket isn't working. None of it hangs together.
Boy, this Rosita was some doll. We had to bury her right here in the city room.
Now, don't be cute. Not now.
Okay, okay. I'm still trying to track down Belle Dorset.
Stick with it, pig. And check on John Spengler, the heart of gold who offered to bury Rosita.
Somebody else did, too, Ed. The morgue got an envelope with $500 in it.
Pig, I want you to arrange a funeral for me. Tomorrow morning, small and quiet and no circusing.
Right. Where are you going now?
I'm going to crash the private office of G.G. Temple.
I told you once, Adam, stay out of my hair.
All I want to do is thank you, Mr. Temple.
For what?
The $500 for Rosita's funeral.
I don't know what you're talking about.
You knew Blackie Franchot, didn't you, Temple? And Solly Wellman and Belle Dorset and John Spengler. You were with them at the party where you met Rosita.
Now, see here,
Bad
Adam.
Bad company for a big financial man like you, Temple. Do you want to hear more?
I do not.
You went crazy over Rosita. But she wouldn't have any part of you until Blackie Franchot was mugged and run off. A guy named Solly Wellman did it. You work well together, don't you, Temple? You and Solly Wellman.
Get out of this office.
Sure. Kind of warm in here, isn't it? It'll get warmer, pal. Just for example, let's look at Rosita's address book. I think I'll pay a call on Mr. Hotspur Shaner. Then a woman named Hazel. Mean anything, Mr. Temple?
Mr. Adams, I can't believe that Rosita is dead. She was the finest young woman I've ever met.
How did you meet her?
My nephew brought her to the house. John Spengler.
Spengler?
Rosita left me about 4 months ago. Suddenly. I think she and my nephew had a spat of some kind.
Sit tight, Shaner. I'll get it. Hello?
Mr. Shaner?
Who's this?
The police. Homicide. You got a nephew by the name of John Spengler?
What about him?
He was found shot to death in a ditch 1 hour ago.
Hazel, you say you were Rosita's maid.
She was a nice person, Mr. Adams.
Then why did you leave her?
I didn't exactly leave. She came home one night with Mr. Temple. They were quarreling. I heard her scream in a kind of a thud. Then Mr. Temple came in, and he told me that Miss Rosita was going away. That she wouldn't need me no more.
Is that all you know, Hazel?
That's all I know.
Ed, boy, am I glad you phoned.
What's up, Pig?
We just got a police report. G.G. Temple has committed suicide. Blew his brains out.
Sure. Sure he would. All right, Peg, that clears up most of it. Have you got a line on Belle Dorset yet?
Well, I meant to tell you about that. She's staying at her mother's. Here's the address. 674 West Hardy.
Hello, Belle.
How did you find me? What do you want?
Some talk about Rosita.
I don't know anything.
I do. I know Solly killed Blackie Frenshaw. Blackie hated Solly like death because of that beating, and I know Temple was financing Solly in the rackets.
I don't want to hear any more. I don't want to listen.
Blackie was afraid to move in on Solly Wellman because he thought they had Rosita. But when he heard Rosita was dead, well, Solly knew it was either him or Blackie, and Solly got there first.
Go on, Adams. Keep talking. Right into the gun.
Solly Wellman. Tough Solly Wellman. Break a girl apart for a buck.
How do you figure it?
G.G. Temple. When he had that fight with Rosita, he knocked her down. She was unconscious. But he was sap enough to think he'd killed her. And he called you, Solly. The only one who could get rid of the body for him.
You're making lots of noise.
But you found out Rosita was alive. You wanted her dead. Out of the way so you could shake down G.G. Temple. And you made a mistake, Solly. You gave her to John Spengler.
So?
Spengler didn't kill her. He liked her. So he took her to his uncle's place to hide on. Everything was fine until Spengler began getting amorous. He forced Rosita to run away. She was alone again now. Alone and beaten and ashamed. And she just gave up. She gave up and died. Solly, you killed Blackie out of fear, and you killed Spengler for double-crossing you. And you scared G.G. Temple into suicide. A triple play, Solly. Congratulations.
Not a triple play, Adams. Four-part harmony. And because you're so smart, you're the fourth part.
What about Belle here? Going to kill your girl too, Solly? She knows now.
Solly?
Sure, maybe we can rig up something. Maybe the two of you together. You know, double shooting.
Solly!
You rotten gun heavy!
You asked for it, Adams.
Solly, turn around.
What?
You killed him.
He was going to kill me. Operator? Mr. Adams has been shot. Call an ambulance.
Now they'll know, Rosita. They'll know all of it. You'll be buried tomorrow, and maybe there'll be somebody to care. I'm sorry, Rosita. Truly sorry. But you were important. Everybody's important. Now they'll know, Rosita. They'll know all of your story.
Ed. Ed, you should be sleeping.
Hmm? Hello, Leona.
Hello, Ed. You were restless, talking.
What about?
Rosita, her story. What was it, Ed?
Just a story. Read it in the papers.
Jimmy Wallington speaking. You have just heard the last act of Chicago Deadline. Our star, Alan Ladd, and our guest screen director, Lewis Allen, will be with us in just a moment. Next Friday, the Screen Directors Playhouse is proud to present a performance by one of Hollywood's greatest actresses, the winner of this year's Academy Award. Our story is The Dark Mirror, and recreating her original role will be Olivia de Havilland with screen director Robert Siodmak. Now, here again is tonight's star, Alan Ladd. Alan, they really make it tough for you in some of your screen roles.
Well, how do you mean, Jimmy?
Well, first you meet the girl, then you lose the girl. I'd say that's really tough luck for charming guys like you and me, of course.
It certainly is, Jimmy. But you know, in real life, I got the girl.
You certainly did, Alan. and lived happily ever after on that ranch of yours.
Ladies and gentlemen, you might think that the appropriate director for Chicago Deadline would be a former newspaper man born in Chicago. You'd be wrong. He's a former merchant seaman born in England. And if you ask why he's appropriate, it's because the guy can do anything. Now I'd like you to meet him, the versatile director of such other pictures as The Uninvited, The Perfect Marriage, and So Evil My Love, Lewis Allen.
Thank you, Allen. You know, with Chicago Deadline, I'm convinced I made motion picture history.
How, Lou?
I directed a film in which Alan Ladd didn't get the girl.
Well, you have to admit Rosita was a hard girl to strike up a conversation with.
On the other hand, Alan, as I listened to the show tonight, I thought she made the ideal leading lady.
Are you speaking as an actor or a director?
Oh, definitely as a director. In the first place, she showed absolutely no temperament.
An angel to work with.
Exactly. In the second place, we didn't have to pay her.
Financially sound. And in the third place?
In the third place, it was a pleasure to have no love scenes to direct.
Lou, you were speaking as a director. Now speak as an actor.
As an actor, I despise a director who gave me a leading lady like that. Good night, Alan.
Good night, Lou. And no hard feelings. Good night, everyone.
The Screen Director's Playhouse on Tuned 2 yesterday from March 24th, 1950 on NBC. Alan Ladd, the star of that motion picture in 1949. In the same year of the broadcast, he was in two movies, one of which was Brandon, alongside Mona Freeman, which was a Western. It would be adapted on the Lux Radio Theater in 1952, though Ladd couldn't make it for that radio reprise. And that brings to a close this hour of crime on Tuned 2 yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden age. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levanier. It's been a pleasure.